is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Good afternoon, Disaster Recovery Hour. I am your host, Chris Plunkett, every Tuesday between 1 and 2 p.m. here at WVNJ 1160 The Voice. Some people call me Living the Life of Riley. That's out to my sister. Hopefully she's chuckling over that one, but we'll move into today's business. Very busy show today. Very busy show. I want to say thanks to Lisa Bays last week, who is the ACP chapter president down in Kentucky. I don't know what that's in the background. We got some funky jazz music going on here. In Kentuckiana chapter. Got Lisa on the phone because I've seen the last couple of weeks the mid part of the country has been getting crushed with tornadoes, and I, being in the disaster recovery business of property damage and such, and also a member of the ACP, wanted to get the kind of get the feeling of not to say lighthearted buzz and feeling of what was happening down there. And different parts of the country have different types of protocols and urgencies when they set their business continuity plans. So I wanted to get the feel for that. Up here, we're different. We have northeasterners, if you will. We've had some tornadoes, but again, we're moving across the country. We've got some we got very good momentum. Listeners from out the country are going on signing up for the podcasts, which is at drhradio.net. drhradio.net. You can put in your email, sign up for the podcast. Real easy, real simple, and it's free. So I know people like to have free. So I think you should do that. Catch me at your leisure. You know, you don't have to, if you're working during the 1 and 2 o'clock range or the central time. One of my guests will be from central time today. There's the mountain time and there's the Pacific coast time. So I don't get that out enough. You know, people always say, well, how can I listen to you? I always, you know, I get jacked up so much in the program that I forget to talk about the podcast and the signing up. So that is drhradio.net, drhradio.net. So thanks for Lisa for coming on last week and talking about it. She also had the, you know, personal experience. She was in the zone that got affected, had some family members affected. And I also had Jerry on. Jerry, you guys know Jerry already. Jerry is the director of the Disaster Academy down there in Memphis. He is the Disaster Academy director for Service Master, which I am a franchise owner here in the Northeast, up here in North Jersey and all of New York City. That encompasses Manhattan. But I don't want to step on my toes, my fellow Service Master guys. But with that said, I don't know why you're looking at me that way, but we'll just keep on moving. Anyway, we did have a little glitch last week on the comments page because there was a lot of comments regarding the program. And I want to click back to those comments because I'm hoping the same people are listening still. I think they are. So I just want to scroll down the page here and answer a few of those things if I can. Some of them are just pretty much comments, amplifying what the conversation was about. But as I'm scrolling around, I will say this. 2 weeks ago, James Wilson was a professor at Harvard, and he came up with the idea in the late 60s, early 70s about community policing. I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, a civilian coming up with an idea of how a police force can better serve the community. It's been implemented, since I've been alive. You know, I know, you know, the block watches and the community policing and things like that. So I thought it was kind of cool. Guy gets a little ink in there. It's in the very back page of the obits. I'm a little morbid. I like to read the obituaries, make sure I'm not in there that day. But James Wilson, if you guys want to get a little background on him, you just Google that guy's name, and it's a pretty interesting story. You know, kind of a Harvard, you know, like professor with the glasses, and you wouldn't think of him as a crime fighter, but he's a quasi crime fighter. Say that fast three times, right? Anyway, so those comments, let's get back. Again, I'm jumping around because I know I have a very busy show today. A couple of guests calling in today. Regarding last week with, we have Andy Weitzberg in his picture up there commenting. How you doing, Andy? Andy's always a big listener and a big fan of the program. Deadliest Tornadoes, I got a guest writes in there last week. Bear with me because I definitely want to make sure the people get the credit there for taking time to get on the comments page and shoot something to entice the program, more content and, you know, more interest and more conversations. Heck, it's radio. That's what we do here. I got the radio face going here today. So it's the deadliest tornado in U.S. history lasted 4 hours in 1925. Little trivia question, and killed 695 people in Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, the Triangle, the Tornado Alley. They had, 97 tornadoes in that one particular day, and it killed, I'm not even going to say the wrong number, so I'll just say it killed a lot of people. One's a lot of people in my book, but That's for 4 hours. That's like kind of it's kind of like Hollywood type of stuff. That things that don't happen, but I guess that does. Shelley also amplified that. Shelley Lee Johnson. She's a member of the ACP out there on the island, and numerous. She's been a guest several times on the program. Certified and FEMA and auxiliary Coast Guard. So she's a Renaissance woman. She can do it all and helps and listens to the program. I'm very appreciative of her intelligence and things that she can help me with in making this a better program. And that's what most of the guests do. They really, the program started off in this property damage mode about 16 months ago. And it's taken on a new life, kind of a life of, and we really branched out into all types of disasters. I mean, still the core is property because I'm out here, I'm on the radio, I'm trying to, from my experience, from the things I've seen, and you know, being prepared. Accidents will happen, and natural disasters will happen, and hopefully our government does its due diligence in keeping the terrorists from those types of things happening. But natural disasters are going to happen, and my guests, myself, not my knowledge, my experience, along with my guests, if we can give you, again, preparedness about what's coming down the pike, if you will, all better for it, for you guys, that is. Got one from Dave. It said, although they are very rare, we can still get a hit with a tornado and severe wind events up here, which we did have. We had a tornado, classified tornado, just about a year ago. It didn't get classified in Staten Island, which always gets the rook, but Brooklyn and Queens was classified that by FEMA. And there's a threshold of dollars, so that's how they classify it. And then we also had Andy came in with some photos of safe places in the location of a home, and also the photography of personal items. This was a big thing because a lot of the older people, Lisa was talking about it last week, a lot of the older people put a lot of stock in the older items that they have in their homes, and photographing and securing them is a very important thing. And a couch, a lamp, those kinds of things, but the trinkets and such could really be safed off somewhere, if you will. Like I said, there's just a ton of there was a lot of action on the page, and like I said, we had a little bit of a glitch last week. Something from Andy: FEMA has started to address supply chains with the public school prep system. It's a voluntary audit of companies' continuity plan with suggestions of audits and plays of keys and sole source suppliers. Andy, I ran through that question very quickly, so don't get all offended by it, but perfect example is Japan and the goods and services that we get from them. And then with the tsunami and the earthquake, we had a major issue on car parts, for example, in this country. So that's where the supply chain and that's the business continuity end of it. And that's a lot of the guys from ACP talk about, the not just the IT of it, which was back in the day, but it encompasses more things, including the human asset. Things aren't getting done without having people on the phone or actually producing, which we don't produce a whole lot in this country anymore, but there are some things we still do. I think we're going to rock and roll to a. I think we're ready for a break. I think Chris is going to be on the phone. We'll go back and pay some bills, and we'll rock and roll. Be right back.
If you missed part of today's program or you want to hear the show again, you can do so with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast. Just go to www.drhradio.net, enter your email address, and the show will be delivered to your inbox. Keep you and your family safe by getting information on being prepared with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast, available at drhradio.net. When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach Service Master Restoration by CPP anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's cppems.com, cppems.com. Service Master Restoration by CPP, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
Do you know that there are some emergency shelters that have no emergency backup generators? You can be prepared and have your own emergency generator for your home and business. Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien from Academy Electrical Contractors Incorporated, a full-service electrical contractor servicing the tri-state area since 1981. Our specialty is generators. We give you a complete turnkey installation, service your existing generator, rent you the temporary machine for that planned shutdown or that unexpected power failure. Academy Electrical Contractors can install a generator to protect your family and business from a power grid failure. Power your heating and air conditioning system, keep your refrigerator and freezer running, power your well pump, or power your sump pump. Visit us on the web at academyelectrical.com. That's academyelectrical.com. Or give me a call at 877-SPARKIES. That's 877-772-7597. Academy Electrical Contractors, generating satisfaction 24/7 since 1981.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
Wow, we're back. I was engaged in another conversation. I wasn't even getting paid for it. Disaster Recovery Hour, every Tuesday between 1 and 2. I am your host, Chris Plunkett. During that time, WVNJ 1160, I keep saying off today. I don't know why. I got a lot of things going on in my head. I will like to say hello to my guest on the phone, Chris Green. Chris Green?
Hello. How you doing, Chris?
I'm good. Chris is a friend of mine. He's also a consultant to the program. Chris is emergency manager, master of arts in disaster emergency management, certified hazmat, hazardous materials manager, certified in Homeland Security Level 4. There is another part of his bio which is lengthy and impressive. If you guys go to the website, check it out. Chris is the kind of guy that makes me excited about doing programs because he's got such a wealth of information that he likes to get out, and he works private, public. We'll talk about that. We'll shelve that for another time. But there's a lot of information that Chris and I bounce off each other, and that I like to get out on the program. And today's what we're talking about today. Like I said, Chris is also a certified hazardous materials manager. You know, there's been articles in the paper and lately with with Superfund sites and hazardous sites and things like that. And I obviously thought of Chris right away, and I want to talk about, you know, things in our region, you know, from D.C. where Chris is located now, well, even up to Boston. You know, this is an old manufacturing part of the country, and there's a lot of Superfund sites. I think in New Jersey there's 16,000 alone, which is mind-boggling. And I thought with the spring, you know, people start to re-engage in their homes and businesses, kind of that spring cleanup thing, if you will, that Chris could add some value to the do's and don'ts, and also where we're going in the future with these types of issues that, you know, we have several parks here in Bergen County. I know I was talking to Vinny and Kevin, there's a couple parks out in Long Island that they know they're parks with contaminated soil, and, you know, they're shut down now. So how do you go about addressing these issues? So Chris already knows that's what we're going to be talking about. I guess I need to let Chris talk a little bit. I'm chewing up too many minutes here. So, but real quick, how you been? Everything good? Everything all right?
Everything's good. I appreciate it. And, yeah, I mean, you know, household hazardous waste and proper and improper disposal. Superfund sites, of course, you know, I was an on-scene coordinator for Superfund. I've done RCRA enforcement. I got the first two criminal convictions in Tennessee for environmental crimes under what was a new statute back in 95, 96. So Anyway, I love doing environmental stuff, and that led me into an emergency management and other things. So, you know, anytime I get an opportunity to talk about it, I like to.
I don't know if it's official, but I think there was something in the Jersey books about passing or something, letting a law go where the remediators will start to kind of police themselves, if you will. If someone wants to call in and tell me I'm wrong, be more than happy to tell me that I'm wrong. But, you know, get on the comments page and talk about it with us. But you know, you're everyday. Let's talk about your everyday type of people. I know it's not large scale, and I know Chris was also lead. Can I say investigator with the Hamilton, with the post office, with the oh God, I'm spacing right there. Fill me in.
Yeah, no, I was the initial incident commander for cleaning up Brentwood during the anthrax attack, and then I was overall responsible for multiple cleanups for anthrax across the U.S.
Yeah, there's anthrax, but to scale it back, I mean, obviously, you know, the rudiments of getting into the hazmat world and some of the things that, you know, homeowners need to be on the lookout. Because, again, when we were talking about prepping before the show, countrywide, I was checking it out, you know, there's not facilities that are open. They're kind of opened once or twice a year, and you have people storing these hazardous materials in their homes. And I've been on numerous fires where, you know, the county hazmat's got to shut the whole place down and check it all out. And it seems as if there's kind of a disconnect of people not knowing what to do with their stuff. Next thing you know, it's going into regular landfills.
Right, yeah. And the landfills are set up, at least the modern landfills, what we call Subtitle D landfills, are set up to collect that material that may flow through and drain out of this, but it can only do so much. You have leachate collection systems. You've got a plastic, either a flexible membrane liner under that.
Right.
Then under that, you've got a clay liner. So the landfills are all about protecting folks from water, from contaminated water, and from what we call vectors, either the rats coming in and out, birds coming in, dogs, you know, wild packs, and those things. So that's what the modern landfills are. They're built on a liner. They have leachate and gas collection systems all around them, and they have daily cover requirements. They're not open-faced. I'm sure you remember being a kid and having gone to the landfill, and it's just this big pile of garbage. The modern-day, you know, Subtitle D landfills are covered. They have a daily cover requirement. They cover up the face every day. And so that reduces the amount of vectors and other potential problems you can have.
You know, when I worked the hurricanes in Florida a couple of years ago, we were you know, pretty much taking away entire neighborhoods and going to the fill. Mm-hmm. And it, besides it being like a mattress, and the heat and the odors that you don't smell ordinarily, it's just like garbage odor. I thought it was interesting, you know, because a lot of people drive by, especially here in, you know, in Jersey and all the way down to you, we pass these numerous landfills, and you're saying, you know, what the hell's going on there, you know? And so the insight on that is there's requirements, and expand on that if you can.
As far as requirements for safety and for the management of that waste, there's only a certain type of waste you can take into a Subtitle D. We call them, you know, the old municipal landfills. So it's household materials. You can have construction demolition waste come in there. And you have something called special waste. And that's where an inspector would go and look at a type of waste that may be in the gray area of whether it can or can't go into the municipal, the Subtitle D landfill, and then we would sign off on certain amounts can go, maybe even put it on a certain regimen. It can only go into certain parts of the landfill, like asbestos.
Mm-hmm.
Can only go in certain parts of the landfill. They open up the, you know, an asbestos hole or an asbestos pit, put that, you know, dump those in there, cover them up, and then a lot of other materials can go to what, you know, to a construction demolition landfill.
The Brockovich movies and things mm-hmm. like that, mm-hmm. and the old canneries and such, you know, was it the EPA born out of necessity, or
right.
That's where it came to? I mean, entire neighborhoods were just being contaminated.
No, absolutely. The EPA was born out of necessity because, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times when we leave self-regulation up to folks, they take the easy way out, and they end up dumping a bunch of stuff that they shouldn't be dumping in places that they shouldn't be dumping them. I mean, you know, having grown up on a farm way back, you know, in the 70s, you know, a sinkhole was a place to put all the garbage. That's where we put all the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And we used motor oil and all that from the tractors and everything to keep the weeds, you know, off the fence line. You know, now we know that that's not a really good thing to do. But that was just part of it. So the more we learn, the more protective we have to be of the environment. So when you look at the EPA, when you look at Superfund, it was born out of Nitro Valley. It was born out of the Love Canal. It was born out of these different sites, you know, these Superfund sites that are out there because it hurt people. It hurt resources. So Superfund is probably one of your top-tier cleanup, I guess, organizations out of Oswer, the Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response. And what those guys do as an OSC, if we had something happening, it's either an active release or something really bad happening, or it's an old abandoned waste site, we would go out and get control of the site and then reduce or eliminate that the threat to human health and the environment as fast as we could. We had our own contractors. You know, if the responsible party or the primary responsible party couldn't handle the cleanup, mm-hmm. we brought our own guys in to do it for them. We charged them 150% of the cost, and then we took them to court, and it could charge them treble damages up to 300% of the damages.
It's amazing. It's almost it's just like business continuity. You know, if you just ignore it, it's when something does happen, it's going to be a lot more expensive. So doing it properly, and you know, I'm like, you know, Boy Scoutish kind of thing, but you know, you're really hurting, you know, thy neighbor, if you will.
Oh, absolutely.
And but we have a question from Michelle, but we want to stay just a little bit still on the hazmat end of it. Now, there's only so many eyes and ears that from the EPA, you know, the responsibility of regular homeowners with this, with oil and things like that. Mm-hmm. Do you think there should be a larger campaign for awareness on that?
There's a decent campaign now, and it really depends on where you are. Uh-huh. There's campaigns that go on for the household hazardous waste collection programs. There's amnesty days, things like that. But I think you're right, because of the cutbacks. You know, we used to fund them monthly, and then it got back to quarterly, and now it's twice a year because of the funding cuts mm-hmm. that we have Safety Clean or other companies that go out there and set up shop, and you can bring anything you want to them. And they'll label it, test it, package it, and get rid of it for you. You know, a lot of times, you know, I guess back, it was probably 10 years ago, we were doing a lot of responses for mercury because the local news program ran a thing on mercury, and this little kid holding up a vial of mercury on TV, and, you know, hey, this is really bad stuff. And we're like, holy smokes, we need to get out there and start looking at this stuff. And then it just came, you know, a slew of calls came in. Hey, you know, my granddad's got this old paint can full of mercury out back, or hey, there's, you know, I can scruff around in the soil in the old barn and there's mercury in the dirt, you know. So we had all these things that we had to do, and it took a lot of effort and a lot of money, but public awareness is a huge part of it. You know, and a big thing is just understand that just because you use it at your house, you know, doesn't mean it's not safe. It's still very, you know, potentially very hazardous. I mean, you can mix a couple things under your sink and have a very bad chlorine gas cloud or an explosion happen.
Right. Ironically, that happened this morning. I'm on a fire in the city, and an older woman, but she was conversing with one of her neighbors and had a clean and, you know, smoke damage, and she had a bit of a fire damage also, and she was going to introduce ammonia to some of the products that there was another company doing in the common areas, and I said, she said, well, it works really well. I said, you know what, just when you start to mix it, I'm going to be outside in the street because I don't know what kind of chemical reaction you're going to have.
Right.
And I know, you know, it's every once in a while, it's in the paper about people mixing their own things and they're offing themselves. They're killing themselves.
Absolutely.
You know, so the awareness on that, it's, and again, but you're talking about dollars, and it's, you know, they have these, you know, you drop the baby off in front of the hospital, no questions, no asked, you know, amnesty about, you know, bringing in guns and things like that. You know, the amnesty for toxic waste and hazmat is, you know, it's a silent killer, if you will, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it just doesn't affect one person. I mean, you know, I think they say, what, one drop of oil can contaminate 1,000 gallons of water, make it undrinkable. So, I mean, everything we put out there goes somewhere. We're in a closed system, a closed environment, this, you know, spinning globe we call Earth.
Right.
And, you know, everything we put out there is going to come back and get us. So we have to be very cognizant as stewards mm-hmm. here that we take care of the planet we're on.
Right. Going green with Chris Green. I do, well, we're going to go off because I know you have an extensive background with the military and mitigation, emergency planning with those guys. Here's my question for Michelle: is there still an imminent danger of anthrax in this country?
I mean, existing or you know, imminent or emergent threat. I mean, someone can mail a letter or drop something off anytime they want to. In fact, we had three hoaxes last week in D.C. So these are out there. Number one, are they probing the system to see if we can detect things? Mm. Are they probing it to see how we can respond? Or are they just doing it to sap up resources? You have to remember, even if it's fake, even if we're pretty dang sure it's not really anthrax or it's not really ricin or it's not really, you know, these other agents that are out there, we have to react as if it is. And that takes up a lot of resources, a lot of time, and a lot of effort. And actually costs a whole lot of money
right.
to do that. So they can mail fake stuff all they want to, and it costs them a stamp to do it, and it costs us thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to do it.
Yeah, that's a bad thing. I can amplify on that, but I don't want to give anybody information. But
right.
And you know, that's more cognizant when you and I speak about things like that. It's like, where can I go? Because there's a lot of information between your ears that. It shouldn't be discussed. But anyway, Chris, I appreciate the few minutes that you gave me today. It's been on my mind to talk about it, and it's been in the paper a lot lately. And you know, sometimes the news agents kind of skirt the issue and talk about some sick kid, but I want to talk about that and also preventative. Again, it's the Disaster Recovery Hour with preparedness. I guess I'll be talking to you within the week about our other subject matter between you and I. And I appreciate taking the time. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, Chris. Really appreciate all you're doing for us. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bill. Talk to you soon.
All right.
Go to a break. Go to our next go to our next guest. Dave, you're around. Like I said, pay bills. Be right back.
Disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need answers. ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP is the answer. ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP is a full-service emergency services and restoration company. With 25 years of experience in emergency management and restoration, our seasoned team of skilled professionals is ready to assess damages and restore your property to its pre-loss condition.
Who do I call first? What about insurance? Is it safe to stay here? What do I do next?
Fire, smoke, water, or mold, ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP restores your property and your peace of mind. To reach ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's cppems.com, cppems.com. ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
At 23, Lance Gieselman's back was broken, leaving him paralyzed from the waist down and his left leg amputated.
I enlisted in the United States Army, went to Iraq in 2003.
Lance's tank was completely destroyed when it was hit by an improvised explosive device.
I was an only survivor.
Paralyzed Veterans of America is an independent organization dedicated to ensuring our injured veterans get all the benefits they've earned and need. Paralyzed Veterans Senior National Service Officer, Anthony Steele.
I'm willing to do whatever it takes to serve our veterans.
The PVA, from the very beginning of my injury, has always been there for me. If I was having problems with the VA, they were always there to step in.
Injured veterans like Lance will continue to need medical care and services for the rest of their lives, and Paralyzed Veterans will be there to help. If you would like to help our veterans, visit pva.org. A public service message from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Katie Valentine's new UFO show. Watching strange visitors that come and go. The UFO show with Katie Valentine. We're gonna travel through space and rocket through time. Exploring what is possible, examining what is logical. Could we really be here all alone?
Are we really out here all alone? Find out on the UFO show with Kate Valentine, Friday afternoons at 1 on WVNJ.
There we go. We're back from that commercial break. Like I say, paying bills. Chris Green, thank you very much for spending some time with me today. Chris has been on numerous times and will be on a lot more in the future. Read it. Go to my webpage, drhradio.net, drhradio.net. Two things. Check out his extensive bio. He's got pages on it. The guy's been around the world. He's done some fantastic things. He's a true patriot. Great guy. Very pleased to have met him and to be considered a friend of his. And also, you sign up for the podcast, drhradio.net, and put your email address in there and hit subscribe, and you can listen to the programs at your leisure, you know, down at the beach, which is the way the weather's going. The beach weather's going to be here probably in a week and a half. But moving very fast and moving forward, my next guest is on the phone, Randall Till. Randall Till is an ACP member. Randall Till is also with Till Continuity Group. It's his business, and business continuity is his life, is his world. Over 20 some odd years in the business, but also sits on the executive council for the DRA, the Disaster Recovery Journal. I wanted to say DRH Radio. Randall, you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Chris?
I'm okay. So let me just finish my intro about Randall. And Disaster Recovery Journal is a business continuity magazine. It's been around. It's they're on the 46th. I can think your conference is coming up. We're going to talk about that. I want to introduce people to the magazine. We have a link to their website where you can get the magazine. Also, you subscribe electronically for the magazine. Very excited to have Mr. Till with us because I want to talk about the magazine. And in 2 weeks, we'll be going down in Orlando. We're going to be doing a live show down there from their spring conference. Randall, thanks for taking some time today, and you're calling in from Mississippi, correct?
Actually, from Missouri.
Oh, Missouri. I was going to say Mississippi,
yeah,
Mizzou. Say M-I-S-S-S-S-S. So, Randall, so when Bob Arnold, who's the CEO of the Journal, put us in contact. Bob and I had spoken numerous times with Bill here at the show, and also I think I had a conversation with my brother John. I'm not too sure about that, but he said I think Randall is your man for the expansion and the understanding and description of the Journal, and also we could talk about the spring conference. Over the course of, I say, last seven or eight months, business continuity, being a member of the ACP, myself, from different chapters. Last week, from Kentucky, I want to talk about, but the journal experts and articles, the and moving forward to moving to the conference down in Florida.
Okay. Well, the Disaster Recovery Journal was actually founded in 1987 by Richard Arnold, and it was one of the first magazines of its type. You know, the disaster recovery business continuity field hasn't been around that long as a proven practice within businesses. So, you know, it was still a fairly new industry back in 87 when DRJ was founded as a magazine. You know, there's been some other magazines, but this is really the longest running magazine and the most substantial magazine when you look at it. You know, it has over 60,000
right.
print subscribers.
Very impressive.
That get the magazine delivered to them. It's a wealth of knowledge as far as articles from people within the industry on how they're doing their practices and what they're experiencing, what are some of the leading practices in the industry. So the best thing for your listeners is that the magazine is a free magazine. So you can subscribe to the magazine. It can be delivered to you. In addition, I would highly recommend the DRJ website as a source of information. I know I use that in my job quite frequently, whether it's going there to get the glossary of terms, which is maintained by a committee on an ongoing basis, but probably understand how to go about to check out the website, subscribe to the magazine. You know, as we say, this is all there. It's all free, so it gives you a great opportunity.
In the website, we have a link to your website. That's www.drj.com, drj.com. That's the website for the Journal. You know, because I see it quite, let me lower my mic here. I see the magazine at numerous insurance brokerages, insurance companies. You know, listen, let's back, you know, insurance companies about controlling costs and having plans set in place to really minimize the business continuity of it, if you will. So that's how I remember seeing it a couple of years ago. Maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I was in a brokerage firm in a city. And then when Bob Arnold reached out to me, because we got in at another company, then I moved on and become self-employed. Then Bob reached out on I think it was LinkedIn, and said I'd listened to a couple of shows, and I said, wow, this is fantastic. You know, what a collaboration. So, Bob getting you and I together, and the journal is just amplifying pretty much one of the messages we're continually getting out here at the program. So there's a lot of exciting articles in there, like Randall says, it's experts in individual fields, and there's a slew of people talking down in Spring World. Now, when you got on, because you have your day job, but to be an executor on the councils, it's got to take some time, a lot of time off your hands, right?
Yes, it does, and it takes some time. But from an overall industry perspective, my view has been building those relationships and doing the network in the industry. That's where you get your leads. That's where you learn where the direction the industry is going. It's where you get some of the best ideas on how to take practices and fit them within your organization. So I always look at that as being one of those things where I spend time, but it's always time well invested, because I walk away on the console, I'm working with some of the leading people in the industry. So as a result of my involvement with DRJ and going to the conferences, I've got those contacts where if I need to figure out how another institution or another company's doing their BIAs and their practices, I've got those phone numbers I can call and I can say, how are you doing this? Can you give me your example? And that's how you can really take advantage of not only a magazine and the resources provided here, but also from the conference point of view, because my view of going to conferences, and I've been going to the DRJ conferences for 12, 15 years, and it's that industry knowledge and networking that when I walk away from it is the most advantage to me, and I think what is what a lot of the attendees receive when they're attending the conferences and looking at the magazine.
Yes, go on.
But the one thing about the magazine I will point out is that they do an annual study where they do some benchmarking with Forrester Research, which mm-hmm. I think is always valuable. The other thing that I think of a point to look at is that, and you can find all the past articles online at the website, but they also do a listing of all the vendors, all the notification tools, all the planning tools. So it gives you a place to go and say, okay, if I'm buying a planning tool, here are the key vendors that are offering this tool, and it gives you kind of the price, the contacts, all that information.
Yeah, I mean, DRJ.com is the website, and in the magazine, the people that advertise with you, that part of the group, you get some heavy hitters, Fortune 500 companies that are on the ball about business continuity. I'm not saying anything you don't know already, but I know it's a it's what I try to get out there from. It's like as a home place for meeting your children or getting meds, get things in place. It's the same thing, but amplify it much 10 times fold, if you will. And some of the people in the magazines, name a few, because I mean they're household names.
Well, yeah, and this is a fairly small industry when you really start talking about products and services. But SunGard has always been a leader. IBM. We get into all the tools where you can see SendWord Now or Near 3. A lot of the tool people who are providing tools within our industry, and our industry has really matured over the last 30 years to where now there are products out there that are specific on developing business continuity plans and keeping them in a relational database, or having a notification type of a tool, whether it's XMatter, Send3, Notifine. There's core tools out there that have been developed, proven, and are being used by a lot of industries. So a lot of those companies come and use the conference and use the magazine as an opportunity to educate people in the field on what's available to them. So I know from my perspective, you know, anytime I'm looking at a tool for one of my clients, I'm going to probably DRJ's website, or I'm going to the magazine, and I'm saying, okay, which ones do I want to narrow down?
Right,
which ones really fit this client's needs, you know, at the current time? And it's just a great source of information without you having to going out into a web and do web searches to try and find all the players in the industry.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I try to get across is, you know, there's experts like yourself and the numerous other experts, and I know people think, you know, well, those guys are big shots and they're you know, Fortune 500 companies. I don't want people to think that way, because, you know, the journal, you know, in the magazine, you can break it down real simple to a mom and pop shop. You know, you don't have to be having 500 employees. The journal, and what I try to do here with guys like Mr. Till here, guys like with Randall, is for them to get this information. You don't have to be a Fortune 500 company to have a business continuity plan, because remember, you know, I think the smaller guy, he has to really be concerned with his supply chain of disruption and having something in place there, having a backup, having the, you know, somebody extra in the bullpen to throw the curveball instead of, you know, a righty throwing the fastball. Our big guys are taking care of business, DR plans and BC plans, but also a majority of the country employs, you know, anywhere from 10 to 50. That's like the majority of the businesses in our country. They always, you know, we've heard it from Andy and Shelley and some of the other ACP. One of the challenges that they have is the smaller guy thinks he's not big enough to have a plan. And that's it's untrue.
True, and I was interested. I just talked to the Chamber of Commerce meeting a week ago, and the people that I was talking to were people who had employees from, you know, from 5 to 50. So they were, you know, your smaller businesses, and you know, it's easy often when you're a large company, you've got someone dedicated to
right,
it,
right,
and they have a full-time job, and all they're doing is tracking down how to do this and what's the best way. But, you know, what we're doing in this industry is we're managing the risk to our organization.
Right.
And even a small business needs to manage the risk. I mean, when a event happens to a small business or within a region, most businesses that haven't planned for it don't stay in business long-term.
Right.
So
there
are things that you need to do. And you don't need to go to that nth degree of planning, but a lot of it is, and it is not rocket science. It's a lot of it is common sense, but having a way to go about it, and doing the, you know, the assessment, what your business needs, and, you know, what is the most important thing, what are the things that I need to protect, and then when an event happens, how am I going to respond to it in a timely manner, mm-hmm. and then take steps within my business in order to minimize the impact. And, you know, there are so many businesses that sit there and, you know, they've got critical information on computer systems, and they don't even think about how they back it up and how they get it off. And that's their survival right there.
Yep. I guess luck what favors the prepared along those lines. Let's go to commercial break, finish up with those thoughts, and then we're going to talk about the conference down in Florida. Be right back.
If you missed part of today's program or you want to hear the show again, you can do so with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast. Just go to www.drhradio.net, enter your email address, and the show will be delivered to your inbox. Keep you and your family safe by getting information on being prepared with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast, available at drhradio.net.
Sally Field for Wounded Warrior Project.
There are so many things that we take for granted in our lives, but one thing that we should never take for granted are the brave men and women of our volunteered armed forces who daily risk their lives for our freedom. Some of these brave warriors have suffered catastrophic injuries. Some will suffer the effects of traumatic brain injury for the rest of their lives. The Wounded Warrior Project was created to help and support these injured heroes. Regardless of your position on the war, they deserve our help. Please consider the many ways that you can get involved. The Wounded Warrior Project's motto is, The greatest casualty is being forgotten. Let's continue to help make this generation the most well-received group of injured veterans in our nation's history. We owe it to them. To learn more, call 877-832-6997 or visit WoundedWarriorProject.org.
When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's cppems.com, cppems.com. ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP, servicing the New York metro and tri-state area.
Welcome back. We're in the fourth quarter here. My guest on the phone, one of my guests and my present guest is Randall Till. Oh, Randall, I lost my page here. Randall sits on the Executive Council for the Disaster Recovery Journal. Randall, you and I, you'll be down in Orlando?
I will be down there a week from Sunday.
Yes. Explain to my guests about the conference. We have the list of attendees is mind boggling. I'm very excited about what's going to be happening down there. The show is down in Orlando for 3 days, I believe. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We'll be coming down Monday morning. We're going to be going live down there. I'm hoping to talk to numerous people about different disciplines in the DR of the BC and for CPP Emergency Services Service Master. But Randall, let's give us an oversight of what can be expected down at the show.
Okay, this is actually the 47th conference. There's two conferences done each year. One in the spring, which is always in Orlando, and then the second one is in the fall in the September time frame, which is in San Diego, which is also another beautiful location. But the conference, as you said, will start on Sunday afternoon, and it will run all the way through Wednesday at noon. And what you've got is you've got a number of tracks where we've got different advanced level tracks, technical tracks, emergency planning tracks, where you've got experts who will be coming in and speaking on their experiences on specific topics. So it gives you a wide variety of topics and subjects to explore during the conference. Sunday kind of starts off with workshops, and during those workshops there's a mock disaster event, which is always pretty popular, where they'll go through an event and they'll involve those who signed up through an actual event for about 3 hours. And that's usually a very good learning experience on how to do an exercise, how to manage an event. And then there's a number of other sessions going on during that same time. And then as the days go through, they've got general sessions in the morning, which are some of the leading speakers in the industry. You might get some of the government people coming in who will be talking on DHS or some of the government regulations and that topic. And then the afternoons are usually breakout sessions, so you've got different tracks to attend. This year they're doing something new, which is the first time, is they're actually setting up what they're calling an executive track. And they're going to be bringing in people who are at the sea level to talk to the entire audience about how does sea level perceive business continuity.
Oh, really?
The message they're looking to get, and how does our messaging and how does our communication affect the sea level. So it will be a very interesting way to see how our top management receiving business continuity, mm-hmm. but also what they're looking for. And then following that in the morning, there'll be a separate track for just senior-level people, mm-hmm. People with years of experience within the business continuity field, who will be talking on different topics and with senior people on business continuity how it's perceived within the industry and some of the things we need to do to continue to move our industry forward. Mm. And I think that's always been the goal of the conferences. These are the largest two conferences in the world. And the goal is to get, you know, subject matter out there, get the experts
right.
talking about it, and learn how to continue to move it forward and maturing it within your organization so that you're doing, you know, protecting your corporation, but also building more resilient type of services, continually moving it forward. So that's really the goal of the industry, is to bring, you know, people together, bring them, discussions on topics that are meaningful to your organization. And I think with a variety of tracks, usually anyone attending is going to find, you know, they're going to find sessions that are meaningful.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I agree. And I looked at the numerous different speakers. I'm speaking with Randall Till, who sits on the Executive Council of Disaster Recovery Journal, which was founded in 1987. 25th year, 125,000 online users, 60,000 print subscribers. The spring conference is the 47th. It's in Orlando. I will be attending. We'll be doing a live show from there. We've only got a few minutes, so we got some questions coming in off the comments page for you. Some are for me, some are for you. And it's from Ryan T. It says, you rarely hear about businesses being wiped out by weather disasters. Ryan, there's been plenty. Are you aware of any businesses destroyed by the recent tornadoes? I'm actually going to be talking to Lisa Bays, who was on last week from Kentucky, and I can follow up with that for you, Ryan. And if we know if they've been wiped out, was there a plan? In fact, one of the things Lisa did talk about was one of their main natural disaster preparedness business continuity plans is about tornadoes. So, Rye, I'll get back to you on that intel for you. There's another question from Dave. It says, Chris, what does your guest think is the biggest threat to home or business owners? A natural disaster like a tornado or an isolated event like fire? So over the years, Randall, it's natural disasters as a large scale, but more frequent would be the fires and losing IT and things of that. From my experience, how about yourself?
Yes, and you know the way at least from my perspective, the best way to plan is that you plan for an all hazard approach. So you know if you're putting plans together, usually if we do a good job with the planning and the process that goes through that. Your plans that you have in place should cover you through all type of events. That doesn't mean that as part of that planning process, you don't step back and you do some risk assessments of your locations and say, you know, I'm in a place that's prone to tornadoes. I need to do some mitigation against that. Or I'm in an area that is hurricane, and we get hurricanes, and I need to plan for that. So part of that process is stepping back and saying, what are the biggest risks? But, you know, quite often we plan for the tornado or the earthquake or something of that nature, and it's the smaller things that will get a bit.
Right,
and,
right.
I mean, if we do a good comprehensive job of looking at it, our plan should cover us for any type of an event.
Yeah. You know, before we go, you do have a day job, and that day job is, tell us what it is.
Well,
caught you off guard there?
yeah. For many years, I worked at corporations putting business continuity plans in place. I spent a long time with MasterCard International. Today, what I have is a consulting company, and that consulting company assists other businesses with the development of business continuity plans. So whether that be emergency management, whether that be business continuity, disaster recovery, or just setting up the overall governance structure. So I work with a lot of large corporations, but I also tailor it to some of the smaller companies and help them get on their feet and at least put something in place so that they've protected their organization.
Now, do you we got 1 minute left? Do you try to attend any OEM meetings or FEMA meetings in your region?
You know, I have done that through my career. I have actually been pretty engaged with some of that.
Mm-hmm.
I know when PS Prep came out, and PS Prep is a government initiative in the business continuity
right.
industry. It's been going on for a number of years. During the early days of that, I was fairly engaged, and I attended some meetings in New York and D.C. on that. I've kind of floated away from that. But, yeah, I do get engaged. And I think a good thing for the audience to look at, especially if they're new in this field, probably most cities have some type of a local, you know, if a local planning group, and if it's not a city, a region will have it. And often those local groups, and you talked about ACP, which is distributed throughout the company, that's a great place to sign up locally, attend meetings, get to know people, once again do that networking so you can, you know, get your questions answered. So I would really encourage some of those relationships for your listeners.
Yeah. Randall, I appreciate it. I'll be seeing you in a week and change down in Orlando. Randall Till sits on the Executive Council for Disaster Recovery Journal. There's DRJ.com is their website. Their link is on our website. You know, you said it before real quick, you know, this industry gets really, the farther you go up, the smaller the industry gets, and the people that you know, it's like, oh, I know that guy. It's not even 6 degrees of separation anymore. It gets like three. I know this guy over there, and he knows this guy from here. And it's a great community. I think more people should be involved. We got the 60 seconds to roll. Randall, thank you very much for your time. I'll see you in, like I said, a week and change, and we'll see you at the conference. And thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
No, it was outstanding. Outstanding. I told you it was going to go fast. Randall, thank you very much. Thank you also to Chris Green. 45 seconds driving down the field. I should be able to win the game. Big thing, you know, with Afghanistan. This is just, you know, let's get out. Bring home our troops. It's ridiculous. Why are we still there? Past 10 years. Bring home our troops in Iraq. Everybody, God bless our country. We'll talk to you next week. And be safe out there. We'll talk soon. Take care.